Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that normally sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better. But this week is a special triple threat week as three movies go head-to-head. Monday, we were welcomed to The Rock.
Listen, I'm just a biochemist. I drive a Volvo. So what do you say you cut me some friggin' slack?
Thursday, we were welcomed aboard Con Air.
I got your package. Those pink coconut things have made me quite popular. Met a guy just the other day, Baby-O. He sure does love him.
Which means today, we're being welcomed into the doctor's surgery as we find out what it's like to take your face off.
How is it that you know so much about Sean Archer?
I sleep with his wife.
What? So, once we kidnap Super Cop, then what?
I'd like to take his face off.
We'll have a winner at the end of this show, but which is the best film, The Rock, Con Air, or Face Off? Let's find out. It's a Clash of the Titles Triple Threat Special.
Release the Kraken.
Hello, Clash Butters. No more drugs for that man. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilly.
And here we are, the end of a big week. Two films down, one to go. Before we decide on a winner. A reminder that all January we are taking your suggestions for the films we pair. Clash Pod is under your control. There is still time to get a suggestion in. Best email us show@clashpod.com. Chris, who came in with these three fantastic movies as a triple threat week?
Ben Ryan and Gary Bailey.
Nice work, Ben Ryan and Gary Bailey. Thank you for these suggestions. Right then, let's do this. I cover The Rock. Chris took us aboard Con Air, which means Victoria is our guide through the wonderful world of Face Off. Victoria, take us on a journey.
After a cackling bad guy, Castor Troy, murders a child and is blasted into a coma by a jet engine, John Travolta's tough lawman, Sean Archer, uses his enemy's face to infiltrate a very scary off-the-grid prison system, sourcing intelligence about the location of a not-scary bomb. When having his face removed, magically revives Castor and he assumes Sean's identity. The two men do brilliant impressions of themselves, trying to be the other, as Sean, as Castor, tries to get his life back, escaping from prison really easily, reminding his wife who he truly is by pawing at her face, then using mirrors and birds to confuse Castor as Sean, finally besting him after a thematically off but still great speed bolt water skiing sequence. Sean adopts Castor's child, healing the rift in his heart, or as a final fuck you to Castor, depending on your reading. You murdered my son, so I will steal yours. The end.
Ooh, very good synopsis.
Thanks.
Yeah, it is a good synopsis. I mean, I think you hit the really interesting nail on the head, which is watching them do each other. Watching two actors who do love a tick or two doing impressions of each other.
We'll get into it, but I would disagree. I would say you're watching Travolta do Cage and you're watching Cage do Cage. Yeah. He just doesn't bother changing anything.
Yeah, he does look a bit more mournful, and that's about it.
So the history with this film, I have to confess, I'm so glad we're doing this film because I've seen this film so many, many times. It was just one of the videos we had, student house, let's all stay in, let's smoke loads of weed and watch this film on a loop, basically. And I've seen it to death and I love it very, very much because of that. And the action's brilliant, everything about it is brilliant. But what about you two?
I can remember seeing the teaser trailer in the cinema, probably before Con Air. And it was, do you remember the teaser? It was very good where the camera's panning around. It was a proper teaser where it wasn't footage from the film. And the camera's panning around John Travolta's face while he gives a speech about who Castor Troy is and why he's trying to track him down. And then as the camera goes behind him, he says, I've figured out a way to track him. I will become him. And when the camera comes back around, it's Nicolas Cage's face.
Yeah.
And it was like, it just got you so jacked for the movie.
Yeah.
So I was up for it. I definitely saw this one in the cinema. And I will say now that at the time, this was my favourite of the three.
Okay.
Back in the day. And then I watched it about 10 years later and I didn't like it as much. But I'm not going to say how I feel about it now.
Okay.
But yeah, so I've been up and down on this film a little bit.
Yeah, I watched it on VHS. Don't know when, but do remember it being one of those huge epiphanies. Like, for me, this was like a forerunner in my like schooling of like really stylistic action, because until The Matrix came out, some of the shots in this, like the gunplay and the slow-mo, I was like, this is so beautiful. This is action as a ballet. Mm. It's wonderful.
Well, being a geek as well, I was and still am.
No.
I don't know if you've noticed. It was also this big deal about John Woo coming to America and making movies there. And so everyone was excited because his previous work was so interesting and so different to Western action films. And then Hard Target didn't really work.
Don't you dare say anything bad about Broken Arrow.
It was fine. No, but Broken Arrow, it felt like it didn't quite all come together. Like, it was a bit too silly. When you talk about Con Air is the right side of silly. I think Broken Arrow might be the wrong side.
Yeah, I think there's some great stuff in Broken Arrow.
What I mean is I feel like this is where it all came together for him in terms of getting the action, the story, and the actors right.
Certainly in terms of box office, this was a huge film. Huge.
Yes, rightly so.
You still with us?
Yeah, sorry. I'm really excited. I'm just trying to get my thoughts together.
No, I was going to say, I was thinking maybe we should all have taken our faces off and done each other for this podcast.
To swap faces? Mm. I would like to live as you for 10 minutes, I think.
If you could swap your face with anyone, who would it be?
I don't know. Mm. I'm quite eager. It will come as no surprise to you. I'm quite egotistical and I don't really want to be anybody else.
Yeah. I mean, that feels like one of those questions that journalists throw into an interview and I go,
I needed prep time for that. I can't just spontaneously answer that question. That is a question that I want to go away and then think about.
And also come up with a funny answer, yeah, which is not the true answer. All right.
We've got an hour.
All right, so a bit of background. This was written by Michael Colleary and Mike Werb. It was a spec. At the time, the market was obsessed with the next Die Hard. So the two of them were like, what can we do in that space? Mike Werb said that a friend of a friend had been in a hang gliding accident and they had to remove and reconstruct his whole face, which got them thinking. They were kind of obsessed with the idea of a futuristic prison as well. And once the two of them had landed on the idea of the death of your child being the reason you would go into having your face swapped or taken off, because your motivation would have to be quite strong, then it all came together for them quite quickly. They said, quote, we didn't discuss it with our agent because we would be laughed out of the room, which I quite like. They wrote it with Arnie and Sly in mind for the leads.
Yeah, that's right.
And it was set very much in the future in their original spec to help get them round the face swapping technology. Mm. My favourite quote from them is on the DVD commentary where they talk about, you know, the larynx microchip. Mm. So they said they just put microchip as a placeholder and waited for John Woo to be like, sorry, a what? Because that doesn't make any sense. But no one picked it up. And because the script is such a house of cards, there's a lot. I mean, there's so many reasons why it shouldn't work. The tech shouldn't work. Like, John Woo wanted to bring it more closer to our time rather than being set in the future. But the writers were on, they were on set watching it, you know, be filmed, because everyone was so nervous. Like, if you pull on one of the threads, the whole thing falls apart. Mm. But they got so panicked. They were just like on set one day. They're like, everyone is going to hate this film. And one of the Mikes had tried to buy a house, but pulled out of the deal. Cause he's like, I'm not going to make any money off this. Like, we're done. We're absolutely finished. So it was optioned by Warner Brothers, but it didn't take off there. People didn't really get it. Apparently one of the execs was like, how will we do the makeup for the leads? And they were like, no, you don't, they don't, they just are each other. Like, you obviously don't get this. So it was going to be Rob Cohen directing, which didn't happen. And then Marco Brambilla from Demolition Man. Mm-hmm. Now he wanted the leads to be younger and Paramount wanted Johnny Depp. I don't know if this is true because I didn't corroborate it, but it's funny if it is true. Apparently Johnny Depp thought it was going to be about ice hockey, but it isn't. So he left. Because a face-off is a thing in ice hockey. Anyway, I wish that's true.
Start reading your scripts, Johnny. Don't just read the title and go, sounds great.
I'm in. Yeah. But John Woo had read the script when he was doing Broken Arrow with John Travolta. John Travolta wanted to do it, and that brings Nicolas Cage back in. Like I said, John Woo takes out a lot of the futuristic stuff in order to concentrate on the characters. And a little fact I found out, which I thought would be something you liked, is there's a novelization. Are you aware of this?
In this instance, I am not.
Really?
Yeah.
I want to read you a line from the novelization by Clark Carlton. Quote, from inside his pants, Archer felt a strange yet familiar sensation. He was sure that inside his boxer shorts, 1,000 topless French women, the size of ants, were erecting the Eiffel Tower. There you go. Make of that what you will.
So, Vicky, have you read the novelisation and listened to the commentary?
No, I've neither read the novelisation. Oh. I've lifted that quote from another interview. And I'm not going to reveal my sources.
I was getting excited then.
Yeah, I know.
That sounded like some brilliant face-off fan fiction.
Clark Carlton then went on to write a book called Prophet of the Ghost Ants. So he loves ants.
He does, doesn't he? He really does.
He really loves ants. That is as much as I got. Any more?
Don't tickle me.
It's funny, isn't it?
The idea of just crowbarring ants into any novel, yeah. You write.
If you've got a thing.
They're not real ants either, but they are imagining ants. Yep. And the ants are they're touching me and they're on my nipples, but they're not real ants, but are they?
It's good, isn't it? Would you like to talk about the film?
Yeah. I think that's a good idea.
Ghost dance.
Yeah.
Oh, no, talk about the film. Sorry. Yeah, brilliant. So, cold open, kill a child on a carousel, which is why this film is amazing.
Yeah. So, first question, why would you wait until they're on a merry-go-round before you shoot?
Fantastic question. Yeah. Also, there's a moment where Nicolas Cage, who at this point is bad guy, Castor Troy, pauses because he sees that his enemy, Sean Archer, John Travolta, is with a child. Better question is, why the fuck else would he be on a carousel unless he was with a child, unless he operates the carousel?
I don't know. I don't mind. Sometimes I just go down the local fairground and ride the carousel on my own.
But behind a child, but it's not yours.
I don't think this opening is sentimental enough. I think it could be more sentimental. But I do think that it's insane that Nicolas Cage clearly doesn't want to kill the child.
Yeah.
And yeah, he can't see the child when he takes the final shot. And there is a line coming up, not 15 minutes from now, where Nicolas Cage says to John Travolta when they're facing off against each other, "Huh, we both know our guns." And yet he clearly does not know that gun he's firing because he doesn't realise it's going to go straight through John Travolta and hit potentially the child behind him.
True. Very good point. So 3 minutes in, Nicolas Cage is a priest now, calls Handel a hack for writing the Messiah and feels up a chorister who is also a child.
Yeah, that's so weird because I've now reached an age where I did not notice that ever before on my numerous watchings of this film, how young that choir girl is. And this time round, it is quite uncomfortable viewing.
Yeah, and the idea is that he is like the best terrorist in the world. He's not behaving like a good terrorist with the singing and the hat and the grabbing of teenage butt.
And the headbanging is... I can't decide, genuinely, that headbanging scene, it's either one of the greatest or one of the utterly worst Cage moments ever. And I err on the side of greatest because it's so... Just, what are you doing?
Well, how do you feel about, and I'm surprised you've not mentioned this, but I could eat a peach for hours.
Have we got there yet? Has he said that yet?
He's about to. I'm racing through it. He's on the plane with an undercover agent of the law. We've met his brother, but we'll come back to Pollux. And this undercover agent's job is to sit on his lap and he announces to her that she's just like a peach and he could eat a peach for hours.
Yeah, it's his big, it's his thing. It's his the game. It's his chat up line.
I tried it over Christmas.
Eating a peach.
Yeah, they go off quite quickly and about 45 minutes in, you really don't want to go near it. I don't know what he's talking about.
But it is funny when he's like, where would I send flowers? And then he says, I can't remember, but then he sticks his tongue and he's like, would you be grateful?
What would you say if I let you suck my tongue?
Oh, but then he sticks his tongue out. Like, it's quite a potent line, but I don't want to see your actual tongue. Mm-hmm. Anyway, 10 minutes in, massive fucking shootout. Caster's brother, Pollux, played by Alessandro Nivolo. We should talk about his voice for a second. How do you feel about the voice that Pollux has?
Love it.
Do you?
I think Pollux is great.
Well, it's better than his voice in Goal.
Oh, yeah.
That shit Cockney accent he did.
I quite like his accent in Goal.
Yeah, we disagreed about that on the episode. Yeah.
Glad I wasn't here.
I like his characterisation here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that with Caster Ties' shoelace, I think that sums up quite a lot in a very quick moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, their brotherly relationship is very strong and very nice. I mean, that whole runway chase is beautiful.
Yeah, it's amazing.
But the bit where he drops the agent out of the plane
and then
just goes, oops, it's fucking hilarious.
Because then we know he's not fucking around. He's happy to leave a string of bodies, but he loves his brother and that's his Achilles heel because otherwise it seems like he hasn't got an emotional in at all. So those scenes do a lot of work. But also with, 10 minutes in and you've had a dead child and a massive shootout. And then now Nick Cage is going to be blasted into a coma by a jet engine.
Yeah.
I mean, amazing.
I mean, Pollux is clearly there. I mean, you do. We all understand that Pollux is there because he is going to die. He has dead meat tattooed on his head.
He's a pawn.
Mm.
Yeah. So let's talk about John Travolta's life.
Well, let's talk about John Travolta immediately knowing how to operate the control panel for a giant jet engine, which is a bit like, I mean, it's a great moment. And really, in this film, should you really be, to quote you, pulling at any string whatsoever? But he does just sort of go, oh, it's one of these that I've seen a billion times. That'll do it.
Yep.
I had no problem with that.
So we meet Eve, who is Sean's wife, played by John Allen. We need a tell here, which will become important later, which is how you're gonna establish who is who. So Sean and Eve have this cute thing where he drags his hand over her face. But this is how much I've changed. When I was watching this film on repeat, and I haven't watched it since I was about 21, 22, I thought that was so romantic and like quite sexy and like, oh, the God, you guys. And now I would be like, mind my fucking eyes when you do that thing.
But it wouldn't work for me and you with our glasses, would it?
No.
me and my little brother had a thing where just before one of us went too far and it turned into a little fight when we were kids, yeah. I used to hold my fingers as close to his eyes as I could without touching them and going, but I'm not touching you, so you can't actually do anything. Ah, shame.
Poor James.
Shame, what are you going to do? Shame.
Poor James.
That is so annoying.
it's really annoying. But when I see this, I'd be like, get that away from me. Yeah.
But also in a time of COVID now, it's even worse watching people just fingering other people's faces.
Well, nothing's worse than the expression fingering a face.
No. A little bit of plot. We learn, even though that Sean thinks Castor is dead, there's a bomb that's going to go off. And I think this could be fatigue from watching The Rock and Con Air.
Possibly. Yeah. Which we've all felt.
Mm. Yeah. But then they're quite coy about what the bomb will do. So someone's like, oh, this bomb's going to go off and it will destroy everything within a square mile radius.
Well, if you want a bomb to sound quite scary, you use the turn of phrase, a biblical plague.
Yeah, cool.
Which is like, okay, I get that. I remember the plagues and the Bible. So this is bad.
Yeah. Say dirty bomb.
Yeah.
They're the ones,
yeah,
aren't
but
they?
Still, but then oh, they're all, dirty they, bomb. To me, they I pull back a bit from it.
Filthy.
Like, and if it goes off, the effects will be slightly worse than Gulf War syndrome, which I've kind of forgotten what that is.
Yeah. Yeah. You didn't touch on his daughter, who we do meet as well. And I only mention her because I think we have a contender for second place after Maggie Grace and Taken for the most
the
ridiculous fucking run. Yes. When she has a little tiff with John Travolta and she runs away, I'm like, oh shit.
But it pays off because when she runs back at him, we'll get there. I immediately thought of you and Maggie Grace in that lollipop, like,
hey! All limbs.
What is it? If it's like you're meant to be the teenage daughter of this man, you just can't.
Also,
run
Hollywood
anymore.
Films of this period, if you wore a bit of black eyeliner,
oh, yeah,
that was it. You were a villainous
your life
goth.
Was over.
Yeah. I just wonder whether there is a certain running trainer who deals with, if you're playing a teenage daughter, you go to this one running trainer and he's just terrible and he's like, it's all limbs.
Yeah.
It's all limbs.
Try and get your legs as far to the side as you can.
Here, watch this video of a baby giraffe. That is what you're going for.
So the idea of a covert op involving a face transplant is sold into Sean, John Travolta at this point, and he's not keen. And I love the scene where they're like, look, if you do this, you can't tell anyone about it. And he's like, okay, let me just get this straight. You're asking me to break the law, betray the people I love by keeping them in the dark. And he never once says, you're asking me to rip my fucking face off and put it in a fucking jar. Are you mad?
Yeah, it does feel, that whole bit, because they emphasise it so much, does feel a little bit like, we need you not to tell anyone about this, including your wife, because we need to make this movie last 2 hours, 15 minutes. If you tell anyone, it's going to severely reduce that runtime.
Yep. So we get to the scene where the face is cut off and it's brilliant and it looks amazingly realistic. And John Woo is really good at being sort of, again, quite coy with the shots. So you don't see this like bloodied skull, but you will see that a little bit later on. The only thing I was thinking is you've got the body of Castor, the body of Sean. If I was Sean, I'd be like, can you take his face first to make sure this technology works? Why are you dicking around with a laser on my chin?
So two things. First of all, the doctor is, I love the actor, Colm, I don't know how to pronounce it.
Fiore,
is that right? Yeah. Yeah, he is great. He's in one of my favourite sci-fi movies, which I'm going to get lambasted for, Chronicles of Riddick. I love that film. Plays the master commander in that, I think he's called. But I watched The Perfect Storm, the Stephen King miniseries over Christmas, and he's the bad guy in that. And then I just happened upon an article recently that is Stephen King's favourite adaptation of his own work for TV.
Really?
The Perfect Storm. In fact, he wrote it for TV. But the other thing is, so the doctor makes a point of going, this is a great match, by the way. Same eye colour, same skin pigmentation. I mean, we won't go into the fact you're entirely different builds, but let's just gloss over that. This is great.
Yeah. And also skin pigmentation and eye colour are two things you can change right now cosmetically. Like, I can do that in the next 10 minutes. Like, it's not a big deal.
I couldn't help. And it kind of spoiled it for me because the scene in itself that I'm going to reference is so funny. But whenever they talk about like the face-off scene in this, I just think of the movie Spy and Jason Statham, where he goes, why don't you put me in the face-off machine that I know you've got and just give me a new face? And you're like, oh my God.
What's the deal with their dicks as well?
Yeah, because they do have sex with, John Allen has sex with someone.
Well, I think the doctor gives them a bag of 1,000 ants and they use that to raise the Eiffel Tower.
Because then it had me thinking about the actor's dicks.
What?
And I imagine that John Travolta's has more girth and probably a big dimple.
You think Nick Cage is very narrow?
Yes.
I think Nick Cage's dick has his own face on the end, doing the scary Nick Cage eyes with teeth going, ah.
I'd like... into that. Why not?
Suddenly, it's gone from Chris being weird for even thinking that to you being weird for wanting a dick with a face on it.
Nicolas Cage is very specific, not just anyone.
Oh, yeah, sure. If Nicolas Cage dropped his trousers, if things happened, you were at a party, Nicolas Cage was there, and he dropped his trousers and his face was on his dick.
But, oh, there it is.
Cool.
Yeah.
I have no problem with that. I wouldn't even gasp.
Yeah, thank you for getting my consent.
If they did the op halfway through, he'd be Dickless Cage. Thought of that.
Oh, that's not bad.
Isn't it?
So the face thing has worked. We get some good, some great face acting throughout.
Yeah, a lot
of good face acting. There's an issue with the voice. So then we get the larynx microchip nonsense. And the doctor says to, I'm going to refer to Sean as Caster to try and keep us understanding where we are. To Sean as Caster, this larynx microchip, a sneeze could dislodge it. And you think, I bet that comes back later.
Weird.
No, it fucking doesn't.
Weird. It never, ever comes back. I think there's one bit at the very end where briefly...
At the end the voice comes out.
Yeah, but the amount of action that the two of them have seen up to that point, if a sneeze can dislodge it...
And you don't see them sneeze, though.
True.
The right place to do it is the drug party at his accomplice's house. That's when he should accidentally knock it and somehow be able to put it back in place. But for a brief moment, everyone's like, what?
Killed.
Did you just do Sean's voice? And he's like, no.
Yeah,
that would be great. There's a bit where he's with his wife, Joan Allen, and she touches his scar, the scar with a bullet passed through his chest. Mm. And she says, look, the scar won't move, but it will heal if you let it. And I was like, you're a fucking doctor. I don't think it can. I don't think scars heal, Joan Allen, the doctor. I think that's the famous thing about scars. Oh, what sort of doctor are you?
It's got tissue.
They fade.
They don't heal, though. They're always still there. Mm. Anyway, it's been there for 6 years. That's how long it's been. Because earlier on, he goes, when he thinks that Caster Troy's dead, he comes in and he goes, I'm so sorry about the last 6 years. And you're like, that's a long time to be a shit.
Yeah, I thought that. He's really put his family through it. Yeah. She's right to be pissed off. So Sean as Caster, or... I think Nicolas Cage as John Travolta, but he's still Nicolas Cage, gets to a very still futuristic looking prison with the metal boots, and he needs to convince people, and his brother no less, that he is Caster. And no one is better at gradients of Nicolas Cage than Nicolas Cage. So when he gets into a fight in the cafeteria and he's laughing and then sobbing and he needs to get stuck in, but he doesn't want to because he's really Sean Archer, that scene is so brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, the whole prison scene does feel like John Woo has gone, we're not going to do this in the future, we're going to do it in the real world. But I'm going to keep the prison in the future because that's fucking cool with magnetic boots and this dystopian image of deer on the wall.
Yeah,
that prison feels like a sci-fi movie.
For definite. It doesn't feel like anything that actually exists. There was a scene that didn't make it because it was too expensive to do, which we'll sort of come on to, but he was going to escape underwater because obviously it's in the middle, you find out it's in the middle of the sea, but it was too expensive. So it just, you've got this rubbish escape.
And it's called Erewhon, the prison, which is nowhere backwards.
Yeah, which is so annoying.
That's so weird that they cut the underwater scene in that for him jumping off with the helicopter thing, because in The Rock, Michael Bay was facing a $60 million lawsuit briefly when he walked off the movie because Disney wanted to cut the underwater sequence from The Rock where they arrive at The Rock.
Why?
Being money.
Oh, okay.
Money. They were like, you can't have that scene. So he walked off and they were like, we're going to have $60 million. He was like,
you can have it.
I'll come back.
So despite my love for this film, I think one of the opportunities it misses is with Pollux. So Caster is with Pollux and Pollux just straight up doesn't believe the man in front of him is his brother.
Why would he? He's like, he's face off. He's done a face off. He's clearly done a face off.
Yeah. He's really struggling because this could be the best episode of faking it ever. But he's really messed it up.
I just think it's a shame that you don't get Pollux in on it and then he can be betrayed later. He's just straight away like, prove to me you're my brother. And it's like, but I look exactly like your brother. So, anyway.
And Thomas Jane turns up and I'm like, that's crazy. I've never noticed him before.
Needs a haircut.
Back in hospital, it turns out having your face removed can wake you up from a vegetative state, which is handy to know. And if you want to stick a cigarette into the bleeding mush of your skull And look, there's John Travolta's face just right next to you.
Why do they leave the other face out?
It's very tempting, isn't it? Oh, and next to a pay, not a payphone, a phone
I
that just, works.
I would have thought you put it in a fridge.
Yeah.
It's in some special fluid.
Every face-off operation I've seen, they put it in a fridge afterwards.
This whole scene, though, where Nicolas Cage screams and he touches, like, you can't see his face in the scene. He touches it with his two fingers and pulls back and there's just blood on them. And the bit on the phone and the scream, it's a great scene.
It's good. It's quite Joker, though, I think, from 89 Batman as well.
Yeah? But then you get, so then you do get to see the sort of bleeding mush in the reflection of the Doctor's glasses, which is really, really good.
It's made even better because you've got the bleeding face in the glasses and the Doctor says, "What do you want?"
It's
like Nicolas Cage. It's like the audience is going, I mean, we do that. We do. We fucking know what he wants, and we've seen the trailer for the movie.
Yeah.
But obviously, you don't. Nicolas Cage goes, "Take one goddamn guess."
It's so brilliant. Now, so Sean as Caster, played by Nicolas Cage, just to remind you, decides to escape from Erewhon. So just does, basically, which is a bit lame. He's just like, I'm just going to get out of here.
There's a lot of convenience because that guy who, the only guy that Pollux told him about, they had a history, like he slept with his wife and his daughter or something horrible.
Yeah.
And he's the guy who's in the room where they remove the boots at the same time.
And he just sort of apologises. Goes,
yeah, I didn't do that, by the way. That was a lie. He's like, let's get out of here together, teammate.
Pal.
Yeah. This prison, so when finally Sean as Caster has broken out of prison, he's on a sort of oil rig, he could be literally anywhere, but he jumps off and then he swims a bit. Oh, look, he's in LA. That's handy, which is good.
Yeah, but that, again, talking about stylistic action and
you
know, I've got a thing about slow motion and helicopters, but that bit where he leaps and the helicopter,
his little
the helicopter
peddling.
Comes into shot from above and it's like him and the helicopter, I'm like,
it is really good. And it goes on forever. But it's brilliant.
But
so
who's really in prison here? Nicolas Cage as like Sean Archer trapped in prison, or Caster Troy, the good time guy, having to live in suburbia?
Yeah.
Look at this place. I may never get a hard on again, even with the help of ants.
Oh my God, that's why. Yeah, that makes sense now.
Speaking of, when he sees the daughter for the first time, more to the daughter, if you see your dad smoking for the first time, does that make you want to bang him immediately? Because that's what this film implies.
It does a bit.
Oh, we smoke. Oh, actually, I've never looked at my dad
it's
like this.
Deeply uncomfortable because she's in her knickers and he reaches around her to get something. Oh, the reach around, yeah, but he does. And he sort of brushes past their bum. And rather than her being like, oh my God, like she's like, Dad, like it's just not, it's not right.
It's that whole scene I've written down, this scene is weird, really weird. And it's also, there's one of like the like affectations doesn't really work where he sort of leaves the room and like he's sort of like smoking. He's like, you're going to see a lot of changes around here. Cool. And then he goes, Papa's got a brand new bag. You're like, oh, for fuck's sake.
Awful.
Well, yeah, you can't have him say that just after the song's played in the background as well. That's overkill. But he is a better father and a better husband.
Yeah.
Yes.
And a better shag.
He's definitely a better shag.
Yeah, a better cook as well. That feast he lays out is incredible.
They've got a thing for candles. So in The Rock, when Nicolas Cage is leaving and he's having sex with a girlfriend on the roof, there's fucking too many candles. I would be so nervous if
you're ready to, if you're like, let's have sex now, and you go, hang on, let me just
get... blow out.
let me get the matches. We need to light them. That takes even longer.
Yeah.
And I need those long matches so I don't burn myself.
But again, it's a sign of how much I've changed. When I saw that at 22, I was like, that's great, that's sexy, let's go. But now I'd be like, we are not doing anything until every single flame is out because I can't relax.
Yeah, that is literally the Michael Bay roof terrace of like that is that Michael Bay has gone, this is where people make love in my films, on roof terraces with lanterns. In fact, I will not make love without a lantern or 200, but I have someone to light them for me. I give them a sign, I go, there's going to be love making.
Have you had sex with Michael Bay?
I think he said that before. That's why he likes Armageddon so much. So Sean as Caster, played by Nicolas Cage, he's now reconnecting with his old buddies and he takes a load of drugs, which seems like a bad idea. And he doesn't really, he's the boss, so they're like, hey, boss, have some drugs. And he could go, no, I'm all right.
But it's not because it's his special, like we see it once already on the runway.
Oh, his little
it's
box.
His special box of fun.
His
and if he's going to pass himself off as Caster, there is no fucking way Caster Troy is not going to get fuck up.
Yeah. So then we see Nicolas Cage playing John Travolta, playing Nicolas Cage, becoming more like Nicolas Cage, I think. Is that right? Because he's bent off, he's like, his mind's all bent on these drugs and he's kind of slipping between the personas.
And he's like, I want to take his face off.
They say the title a few times here, don't they?
Apparently in the script, the mics wrote it, don't repeat that line. You don't need to. It's called Face Off. Let's say it once. But on the day of shooting, Nicolas Cage was like, I would like to do this 20 times.
It's Cassavetes who keeps saying it as well, isn't it?
Yeah, he's got no reason.
You mean you want
to
take his face off? His face off? His face off? His face off? His face off?
So apparently... Nicolas Cage's stand-in said this in an interview, and I've forgotten his name, which is disrespectful, but they're doing it like 20 times, and each time Nicolas Cage is getting more and more hysterical, and the mics are on set, and they said they were worried that Paramount would change the name of the film because he'd made it stupid. Because he just wrecked it.
Imagine trying to change the name of this film. Like, we've got the perfect, there's been no more perfect name in the history of cinema.
Head swap.
It's a synopsis, and it's a pun, and it's got double meaning, and it's so much going
on. No one wants dick swap, so...
I still think faking at the movie was quite good.
But I do like the bit where he nearly shoots himself in the mirror, because obviously he can't concentrate, and that's, you know, and mirrors are a big part of this film for obvious reasons.
I like it when you're never really clear what drugs people are taking.
It's disparate,
isn't it? I thought he took disparate.
It's so weird. It's like drugs that come in a tablet form that you then dissolve into water. You're like, what on earth are these?
Yeah.
It's definitely disparate.
It's like that drug that Gary Oldman takes just before he kills everyone in the apartment in Leon. He pops that pill and then he puts his head back and he's like,
there's some cracking happening.
And you're like, what is that? What drug is that? You've just invented a 90s drug that people go, honestly, 90s movies took such liberties with drugs.
Good. I want to take all of those drugs, if I'm honest. Let's take a break.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This week on Stakhanov.
Throughout January, Clash of the Titles are letting you pick the films being battled out on air. Already binged your way through Netflix during lockdown? Listen as Alex, Vicky and Chris rediscover and tear apart old and new favourites alike, week in, week out.
I like here, though, that Michael Bay starts as he means to go on. I made a list of sort of Bayisms from this sequence. Low angles, lens flare, dry ice, washed out colours, military hardware, men marching, orchestral score, guitar riffs.
Or if you're looking for some much-needed escapism, why Why not catch up with the Abroad in Japan podcast? Chris was recently joined by Joey the Anime Man to discuss mastering conversational Japanese.
That's a really interesting topic, bat channeling, which is where you kind of go,
In Japanese, if you don't do the every now and then people just think you're not listening or you're ignoring them.
All that and a whole lot more at Stakhanov.
Why are they beaming footage of Archer on the news into prison? The first Good time question. We're in the prison, they're showing nature stuff, I guess, to keep the inmates calm. Next time, this bloke who's put half of you in here, let's show him celebrating on the telly.
Great point. Yeah.
Yeah. I also, while I kind of like it, it's the bit where he in the prison where he's trying to save the guy who's helped him escape, and he's sort of holding on to him. And it's like he is putting his family, I mean, how long would you hold on to that guy? Because he's doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Because he's Sean Archer and he doesn't want to let this guy die. And this guy has helped him, but this guy has also just killed a lot of security guards and is a bad man.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just a bit like, he could get caught
doing that. Hold on to him.
And I actually think it would be a strangely powerful moment if he'd sort of gone, I can't help you. Like, you know, he'd realized that he wasn't going to be able to help him. It's a bit of a gray area. He thought he was going to fall, but he's the one, like, he pulls his arm away and goes, I've got to get out of here.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's good. Save that for your change.
Yep, thanks. I'm just writing it in there. Because my change is shit.
back with Caster as Sean, John Travolta. He saves his daughter, Jamie. Not Janie. From a rape, which is nice touch.
Dress up like Halloween and ghouls will try and get in your pants.
Which she rightly says, you were trying to blame me for this.
Typecasting as well, because that actor, Danny Masterson, who is now being done, he's facing up to 45 years in prison.
He's
a famous actor in America, child star, for sexual assaults.
Oh, great.
Jesus Christ.
I think I love that scene. It's one of the scenes I remember the most from the repeat watching in my 20s. But I think it would have, for me, maybe if her real dad, John Travolta, as Sean Archer, would have done the same thing, because we see him kicking the shit out of all the suspects earlier on. So he wouldn't have reacted in a different way to Nicolas Cage.
It's all about the dialogue, though. Would he have come up with as funny lines as the Halloween and ghouls will get in your pants? And then after he's finished it and smashed the guy up and she's run inside, he goes, I am the king.
Yeah, he wouldn't have said that.
No, he wouldn't. It would have hit home more if there was a nicer contrast. Like her dad was a bit lame and he didn't ever really help her or believe her or whatever else. But I still love it. And then we've got a big shootout scene between Caster and Sean and all of Caster's buddies and a hallway of mirrors, which handily is there.
And we do meet Caster's ex-girlfriend, I want to say, and her son, Adam, who looks a little bit like, or weirdly like
it's
Michael.
It's identical, really.
Yeah. I mean, I did go, is that the same kid?
Yeah, me too.
Because that would ruin, there's too many face swaps in this. If they put Michael's face on Adam's face...
Yeah.
Did they put him through the face-off machine? Oh my God, that would have been a better ending if at the end he'd kept his dead son's face and put it on.
Oh, that's better.
You spot my chain.
That gunfight set to Somewhere Over the Rainbow, though.
I love it.
Well, that was the famous thing at the time. That was like, John Woo's done this scene and it's Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and it's like no one would think to do this in America. And it's true, like his brain works differently, and it's there's a lot of unnecessary deaths in that scene.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if our hero is being that heroic there.
He is. He protects. He doesn't kill anyone himself. And in fact, he goes out of his way to save some people and pretend.
But he could team up with the cops, but he's sort of making it about the kid. But really, is it about the kid or is it about revenge and a bit of self-preservation happening there as well?
And the kid gets passed around a lot. Like, if the kid, I think, I like Gina Gershon's character. I like that she gets stuck in and she's a baddie, so she's going to help with the shootout.
She really likes her brother, doesn't she?
She's very close to her brother.
Okay, just checking.
Which is weird, but...
I don't see how he could have teamed up with the cops because he looks like Caster Troy.
Well, so sacrificed himself is what I mean.
But you've always got to remember that if doing the right thing in any circumstance like that is going to leave Caster Troy as with his face and his wife and daughter doing horrible, horrible things to them. So he's got it's about him escape. He has to escape and let people know. Like that he is.
Yeah, I'm just saying he's doing it for himself, I think, more than out of any act of selflessness.
Yeah, there's some nice dialogue. Like they do really build on the father and son thing. So when the shootout starts and they get Adam's headphones so he can listen to his song, it's just a really sweet line. But Sean as Caster says to him, "How did you get to be so brave?" or something like that. Like, you can do this. I thought that was so lovely. Like, that's the sort of thing that makes me cry. It's really sweet.
And the bit where the Pollux Troy gets dropped through the window.
Yeah.
And then the guy goes, "Sir, why are you so upset? It's just Pollux Troy." And kills him.
And kills him, shoots him in the head.
Shoots him dead.
Meanwhile, Eve is finding out more about what's actually going on. She takes a blood sample from the person she believes to be her husband.
I'd argue there's an easier way than stabbing someone with a massive pen in the middle of the night while they're asleep. That I sleep deeply sometimes. That would wake me the fuck up.
I wasn't expecting her to do that.
So she runs it through a machine, and the machine should say, "You definitely can't have a face transplant because your blood types are different." Yeah. But it doesn't, so that's fine. And Sean, her husband, who looks like Nicolas Cage, apologises and tells her the one story that would convince her that underneath Nicolas Cage's face is actually Sean, her husband.
So when he starts this story and he goes, "I once took a date to a surf and turf," the way he says it, "I once took a date to a surf and turf," I'm like, I think you really should be talking about a date with Joan Allen at this point. I thought he was talking about another date. Like, he was just telling some anecdote from his past.
Oh, okay. And then he's like, and she broke her tooth and we drove round all night. And I was like, that's sweet.
I think you're supposed to think that, though. You're wondering where he's going with this story and why he's telling it. And then it's like, because I felt the same. And
All it made me think is, what story would you tell your partner to convince them it was you? And I think if you've been in that marriage as long as they have, or whatever, it wouldn't be this sweet thing. It'd be like, "The last time I saw you, the washing machine wasn't fucking working and you promised me blah, blah, blah," something like, I was like, that's really cute, but it wouldn't play out in real life like that.
There's another bit to that scene as well, because obviously Joan Allen and Caster Troy have slept together at this point. And she says to Sean in Nicolas Cage's body, "We've been living together as man and wife now for a week," basically going, we've boinked.
Yeah.
We've boinked more than once, it feels like, in that sentence. And he says, "I put you in that position and I can never make it up to you," which is the best fucking answer she could have hoped for in that situation. She must be on cloud nine. She's like, cool, because I thought there was going to be some comeback to that. I thought you were going to be like, "It's only been a fucking week and we didn't sleep together for 2 months.
That's true.
His dick doesn't make anything like mine." Yeah.
How many ants did you have to use?
It brought up a lot of emotions to me, because I was like, she shouldn't have to apologise for that, because she's like, I realise the truth. Oh, I better get this out of the way. I have shagged him.
So you wouldn't be apologising. You'd be like, okay, I enjoyed it. Fuck you.
Your fucking fault. Yeah. Yes, you did put me in that position.
Yeah. You need some work doing in the bedroom, because this guy is shit hot.
It just made me feel inadequate, because she's like, "We've been living together, you know, it's been a week, so it's like you've definitely had sex, so you're the sort of people that have sex at least once a week." So I was like, "Oh shit,
it's a lot, isn't
that's
it?
Annoying." Yeah, it's too much. It really is too much. She's like, "We've been together for 6 months, so we've had sex once." I'd be like, "I get that."
How'd you get anything else done? You're busy.
So then there's a funeral for Sean's boss. Which is going to take us into a church, which really the important thing is we're going to get to the birds.
Yeah, it's a beach church.
Yeah.
Considering who he is as well, it's quite poorly attended.
So weird. It's such a low-key ceremony. I was like, are they not allowed 30 or more people at a funeral?
Yeah, wouldn't you be having people with guns fired in the air and American flags? Like, this was a chief of police.
Yeah, in a big cemetery.
And it feels a little bit like a disused church, the number of pigeons wandering around.
But it's also the seagulls. Like, I love John Woo's birds and I love doves, but I do not like seagulls. And when the kid like steps onto the beach, it's like there's seagulls everywhere. And I'd be like, this is a nightmare, an absolute nightmare. A massive shootout. John Allen hits someone with a fucking chair. That's how bad things get. Everyone's getting shot. She's like, whack, chair. Eventually,
I love the way John Travolta, though, and he's done it before, but you really notice in this scene the way he stands like a cowboy, like with his little hand on his gun, on his belt there. Just love John Travolta.
Yeah. So John Travolta, who is Caster Troy, sort of in the air, everyone's in this shootout. So Jamie is present, which is important because she's going to get grabbed by the person she thinks is her dad. Mm. And then the knife that he gave her when he told her, if some sleazeball like that guy in the car tries that again, you stab him in the leg and then you twist it so that the wound won't close. And every time I see this film, the minute she stabs him in the leg, I'm like jumping out of my chair, like a payoff like that. I fucking love. Right. I don't know how she had the confidence to do it, because I think she still thinks that's her dad at that point. I'm not sure. I mean, I know he licks her face, but he's already grabbed her ass, so I don't see what difference that makes. But I love a payoff like that. And then we just get to this ginormous, and it's great to look at, but it's a bit like, why speedboat chase?
Would you know what the original ending where it was supposed to take place?
No.
Was it in the White House?
No. In a mirror factory.
Are you being serious? Yeah. I would love that.
Yeah, but you just can't. You can't.
Why not?
It's so confused. It's such a confused. Like, I get confused sometimes, like, sort of working out why, like, who's who, even though you know who's who.
Yeah.
It's like watching them play the other and then
it's
remembering.
It's too convenient. It's also too convenient having face off ended in a mirror factory, isn't it?
Sure.
No, I agree. I think it would. And we've already done the mirrors thing.
I know.
In the little somewhere over the rainbow shootout. I actually don't like speedboat chases. I hate speedboat chases. There's something about just sort of big open expanses of water and going fast along them. Mm. It doesn't have the same appeal as a really well shot car chase.
Well, you've got one great stunt where a guy jumps from one speedboat to the other, but you don't need the other 5 minutes, I don't think.
No.
I changed my mind halfway through, and it's the bit where the speedboat goes through the other boat and comes out the other side exploding. I'm like, actually, John Woo, you're a lousy speedboat chase.
It is amazing to watch, and what the stunt coordinators have done is incredible.
Yep.
But then thematically, Sean harpoons Caster, and it's like that's just fish. It doesn't work, does it? Like,
but then he's got that broken bit of glass, and he's trying to cut his own face off. Sean Archer will have to look like Caster Troy for the rest of his life.
But then the thing is, you've just undergone the world's most advanced face swap technology. Mm. So a little scar probably isn't a big deal, is it?
Yeah.
But whatever. And so then you get to the end. So interestingly, the ending that was written is the ending you see, but it wasn't the ending that was shot at first. So nothing happens to the little boy. It just ends. I think probably just after they've gone off in the ambulance and everyone's saved and it's fine. But when they tested it, the audience said it was un-American to not tie up the loose ends with this little boy. Like, this little boy's just sort of left, his story's left dangling. Mm-hmm. And so then at great expense, Paramount got everybody back in to shoot the ending that the writers always wanted, which was that Sean Archer adopts Caster Troy's son, Adam, and heals his family.
But he gets a replacement kid.
He gets a replacement child. Mm. With one look to Joan, he's like, is this all right? She's like, yeah. Like, that's it.
And we know Jamie's happy with it because she does a full-on Maggie Grace run straight at him. Daddy!
I
want more, though, from my other half showing up with
a kid.
a son. Yeah. I want more. I think just the nod is not enough. I think there needs to be a conversation.
Mm. I would have said legally, I think there has to be a conversation.
I do think it sets up an interesting sequel, though.
Yeah.
Where this kid turns bad and wants revenge.
That's not a bad idea.
Well, I've got more on that later.
Oh.
Sort of.
Because he's quite messed up, this kid, I would say.
No, I think a nod is fine, seeing as John Travolta, Sean Archer, has basically just undergone a replacement face surgery. So he's clearly been in hospital. And Joan Allen isn't waiting by his bedside, isn't even in the waiting room.
No.
She's doing a bit of typing.
She doesn't even come and get him.
She's sitting at home waiting for him to get back.
Why weren't they at the hospital with him?
Right.
He doesn't need the scar anymore.
Yeah.
Fine. Why did he ask for the love handles back?
Yeah. And also, I thought those love handles were going to be removed. And
they say we're going to give, what's it, an abdominal
plasty? That's what I mean. No, the love handles are removed. And then when he gets times back, he has them put back on.
Yeah.
You'd say, oh, keep them.
Yeah. Wait, hang on, though, because the love handle.
They removed
the love
handles.
It's just a face. Because it's still when he's Nicolas Cage.
They literally removed the love handles. They say it.
Yeah, because but they're removing the love handles on Sean Archer's body, which is Nicolas Cage. So remember that he's getting back the original body. John Travolta's. Wait.
Should we just do this?
It works, though. It works because it's Sean Archer's body when he's Caster Troy.
Yeah.
When Sean Archer is Caster Troy.
Yeah.
And so they have actually taken off the love handles. But that's Nicolas Cage's body. Oh, I see what you mean. No, I worked it out in my head.
That's what I'm saying. Just move on.
Yeah, no, that was right. We should have just moved on a while ago. It's upsetting me that we're still here. I'm going to...
Did he ask for the love handles back?
Everyone has one regret on a show. This will be mine.
I had a couple of questions. Who do you think they would cast now?
Good question.
In Face Off.
As the two people.
Yeah, who would you
want? Do you want someone who's like manic crazy and like a dad?
Well, I think that original one they were going to go with, it would be Dwayne Johnson and John Cena, maybe is who they would do if they went the Arnie Stallone way.
I think one of them, you'd need an actor who, I think you need an actor who's like, just big with a role. So I think Tom Hardy for one of them, definitely.
That's a good idea.
I don't know who you'd put him with.
Well, that's no good. That's like people who send us a pairing and only do one film.
Okay. Tom Hardy with
Fassbender.
Oh, that's not bad. That's not bad, yeah. I could see that.
Two heavyweights.
Yeah. Who've you got?
Jamie
Lee. You can't ask a question.
I said Dwayne Johnson and John Cena, so you just heard me do that.
Yeah. Okay. You've got more to say, haven't you?
Have you got a pair?
I can't think that great.
I think what about a man and a woman swapping?
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of body swap comedies though. So, and then, you know, where a man suddenly
have the plot of that, right? A little bit similar to that Ryan Reynolds one that he did with Jason Bateman.
Yeah.
Switch or is that the change up?
The change up.
I get those two confused because both of them are terrible.
The trouble, when you do a man and woman, all you spend ages is a man going, oh, I've got boobs. It's like, okay.
They've got to be realistic.
I just don't know if you'd be that pleased. If you woke up with boobs, I don't think you'd be that impressed by it. Like, I just don't think you would.
And I also thought you could make this movie now for a lot less money. Because you could just stick their faces into deep fake. That would be it, wouldn't it? This $80 million movie would cost about a fiver.
Is that what it costs?
Wouldn't it be good to do it with twins? Twins swap faces, but they only, like, they knew that they'd swapped faces because everyone else... Wait, no, that would be the same plot.
No, I like the twins thing. That's interesting. If twins swap faces,
the world's most unnecessary surgery.
I'm just looking at budget here. I'm coming at it from a producer's angle.
They didn't really swap their faces.
And if they took love handles out of one and put in the other, would you understand that, Alex?
Why would they have them back, though?
And did you decide whose face you would want? Or actually, if you can't answer that, who would you rather have, Nicolas Cage or John Travolta's face?
Nicolas Cage.
I think John Travolta is more classically handsome, if that's what you're into, but Nicolas Cage is just more fun. So Nicolas Cage,
face is more fun.
Yeah.
John Travolta's face is really good
fun. I suppose it's like, whose life do you want? I suppose I would...
No, whose face do you want?
Well, I want Nicolas Cage's life. His face gets me his life.
Forget the life. Whose face do you want?
John Travolta's.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. He's great looking guy.
You got to think about whose face works with your hair. Because we're not including haircuts in this. Now, you, if you had John Travolta's face, you would look exactly like John Travolta from Paris with Love.
Because he's been bald for the last 30 years.
Yeah, but with the beard that you've got from Paris with Love. Of everything that's been said, that's what you're worried about. Allegedly. He is very litigious about his hair. Whereas you've got the...
What do you think?
You've got that manic Nick Cage thing.
I do.
I honestly think if we did, if we spent some time with a face swap app, and swap faces, you would be the perfect Nick Cage
and you would be
the perfect
Travolta. All right, you get Nick Cage, you get Travolta, I get Joan Allen.
Yeah, Joan Allen's a good-looking woman.
Done.
All right.
Okay, good.
That was all, sorry.
I don't know that she'd look great with a beard. I mean, I'm not saying she would look bad, but, you know.
Maybe that's what he's sweeping your hand over to make sure she hasn't got any stubble. Like, so you've been gone a week. Are you keeping up with the waxing?
Yeah, because we know what you get up to when I've been gone a week. Bang, 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 bang.
Shall we do the bits?
Yes.
Chris, what was your best scene?
It's a scene we didn't talk about, actually.
So's mine.
But when in the prison, when that door opens and Castor Troy has Sean Archer's face and they meet each other for the first time like that.
Oh, yeah.
It's such, and he says it's like looking in a mirror, only not. Like, Travolta's having such fun in that scene, messing with him. And I think it's a couple of minutes that show you what the film could have been if they'd spent more time together.
Yeah.
Like, I think the problem with this film is you don't get enough Cage and Travolta together in the movie.
Yeah.
There's about an hour and 45 minutes where they're not together on screen and they are good together. So,
yeah, I'm sorry I missed that out. I just sort of forgot about it, because the reason I like it is because, having just watched The Rock and Con Air, now you get to see Nick Cage like being a bit of a weasel because he's like sad and crying, and we haven't seen that.
He's weak in
the other two films, and that was such like so refreshing, like to see him like that.
And I agree, it would be fun to see them on screen together a little more, but I don't think any moment of them on screen would be as powerful as that moment, because it's all about like Nicolas Cage as Sean Archer realizing what the fuck has happened been in prison, because he expects to be going home at that point.
Well, I think what you'd have is something would happen where they'd have to work together. And I think that would be the fun and interesting thing to see these two have to team up even though they hate each other.
Yeah, I can't imagine that. He killed his son. I can't see them ever working together. It's a real hatred.
That's good writing, though. You'd figure out a way. Okay. To save his wife's life, to save his daughter's life, he needs to work with him.
But I think Caster Troy, the whole character is he cares about nothing at all apart from Pollux Troy. And once Pollux Troy's dead, it's like there's nothing that I don't think you could be convinced. I don't think, because he doesn't even care about his own son, Adam, or his ex-girlfriend, Gina.
Yeah.
You'd find a way to write this, Alex. That's what good writers do.
You would.
God damn it. And I will.
Do it. What was your best scene?
My best scene, we didn't talk about it either, but it's a very me moment, which is quite simply when Nicolas Cage in slow motion gets out of the car on the runway and the wind catches the robes that he's wearing and they float up behind him. I remember as a kid going, that might be the single most awesome thing I've ever seen in a movie ever. I was just like, oh my God. That's so cool.
And you see those
guns.
And
then he's got gold guns.
Yeah, and then they've got dragons on them or something.
It's just beautiful. Just beautiful.
Mine is a shootout with Somewhere Over the Rainbow, mirrors, and then a brother and sister get off with each other, because why not? Like, in this film, why not? Most valuable whatever, Chris.
I've written down.
I'm interested. Are you going Travolta or Cage?
Yeah, I've written down John Travolta.
Have you?
Whether or not Cage is playing himself in some of those scenes, like all the way through, I mean, Cage is doing Cage, whereas Travolta's, you're not used to seeing Travolta do stuff like this. Mm. And I think that's what makes it special, because you see Cage doing stuff like this all the time. And also, Travolta's face looks really weird sometimes when he's doing Cage, which...
Do you think so? I honestly think his performance in this isn't a million miles from when he's the villain in Broken Arrow. I think there are a lot of similar tics and a lot of similar sort of villainous things that in both films.
Maybe you're right. I guess I'm thinking of every other film he's ever done, which is where you're used to seeing him laid back and cool.
Yeah,
that's what he does, and so it's fun to watch him really go for it. But if he did it in Broken Arrow, I'm sorry, I've picked John Travolta, Alex. Don't berate me.
I'm really not. But he does do it in Broken Arrow.
What about you,
Cage? Just Cage. I've told you watching these three movies in a row. I love him anyway, and like I love the fact he does. You know, yes, he's made a lot of shit for a long time. But you look at this, and then you look at some of the more exciting stuff he's done, like Mandy recently. And you just sort of go, fuck, when he's into something. And even when he's not into something, I mean, fucking Season of the Witch. I'm like, fucking Cage! He's so good. Like, he can make me watch a movie that I would have no interest in watching just to see what the fuck he does with it. So it's Cage.
I agree with that. So yeah, for me, finally, after these three films, having not picked him, I'm going to finally pick Nicolas Cage. Because John Travolta is great as well. But because... John Travolta doesn't get to have the good time, because he has to play, he has to be Sean Archer. So he has to, like, you know, be the family man. Although he doesn't have to, he could just go off and do anything with his new face. But Nicolas Cage calls, you know, he's sad and he's crying and he has that fuller range of emotions. And the self, like, as an actor, he's such a mystery to me. He's so interesting. Like, does he know what he is or does he not? Like, has he, but if you can do gradients of yourself, and kind of spoof yourself back to the audience. Mm. The self-awareness you have, to me, is astonishing. To be able to parcel off bits of your personality.
And unusual for an actor of that stature to be able to be that self-deprecating and make fun of yourself.
Yeah, so definitely Nicolas Cage. And if you could change one thing, Alex, what would you change?
Well, I'm going to have the bit that I said earlier about actually choosing to drop the guy because he wanted to save his family in the prison. But the original one I had is... The daughter scene where he comes in and he borrows a cigarette from his daughter, Jamie. Is it Jamie? I think it is.
Or they
Janie.
Make a joke about it. It is Jamie, but he calls her Janie. And she's like, what? You got my name wrong.
And just, I think it's because she's in her underwear as well. There's something really sort of that father-daughter relationship. And it's probably actually quite a good scene, but because it really fucks with your perception of that relationship, but it made me feel a bit uncomfortable at the time.
Yeah. What about you?
I think you turn this into a really tight 90 minutes, by removing just some of the slow motion. I know it's a John Woo trademark, not all of it, but I think we can shave about an hour, hour and 20 off this if you just get rid of some of it.
My change is, so Castor Troy doesn't know he has a son because Gina Gershon tells Castor, who she thinks is Castor Troy, in that fun line where he puts on the clothes and he says, these are nice clothes. And she says, of course they are, they're yours. That's a cute kid. Of course he is. He's yours. And the way she says it, I don't think she'd told him that before. So when Sean Archer kills Castor Troy and he's harpooned him to the wall, as he's lying there dying, he says to him, you have a son and I am going to steal him and I'm going to erase you from his history and he will never know that you existed and I'm going to change his name and he's going to be my son and I'm going to make sure there is never someone like you in this world ever again and now you're dead. Because to a man like Castor Troy, that's the worst possible thing, that you had a lineage. Yeah. And it's gone, and now it's become
your enemy.
But I thought
he didn't care about his son, or does he not know about his son?
He
doesn't know about his son, but I half agree with you. The other half of me is like, that makes Travolta, Sean Archer,
a bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes him nasty. Yeah. Like, it's so vicious.
It's an awful thing to say to someone. Yeah. Yeah.
It's almost, strangely, even though this man has killed his son, it feels too far over the line for those to be the last words that you hear.
Yeah, that's proper revenge. That's actual revenge.
Yeah, it would be too much for me. I'm all like shoving my popcorn down, going, whoa, it's the end of the movie. The bad guy's tried to chop his face off, but he can't and he's dead. All right, that is it.
That's it.
Hell of a week. Started with The Rock. Then we flew on Connor. Now we've just had our faces off. It's time for the verdict.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled. You want answers?
I want the truth!
Right. We could each go for different movies. This could be a draw. I know you've come up with a way to solve that, should that be the case.
Yep.
I'll start by simply saying this has been one of the toughest weeks for me because I love each of these movies a hell of a lot in different ways. Who would like to go first?
Well, I like that you start with a little speech. This feels like it's getting serious. I'm going to sit up.
I think
he's trying to reposition himself as the hero. this is my film.
I'm hoping he's going to cry.
And when I kill you, I'm going to take your kids and I'm going to erase you from history. I'm really, it's a big week for me. I think this is a really important call to make in the history and legacy of Clash of the Titles.
I don't mind going first because it wasn't even a thing for me.
Right, okay.
Really,
well, then you should go first.
All right, so I'm going to pick Face Off just to get that out of the way. And I'm going to tell you for why. Even though no one heard the pitch because the writers were too nervous of being laughed at. Like, imagine the pitch. And then the film delivers on the promise of the premise times a million because of the actors. So I love the fact that they thought it wasn't going to work and it more than worked. And the other two films, The Rock, for me, the lead character of Stanley is too inconsistent. He's like he's this guy that does everything. He's a hero. But then he's like, I drive a beige Volvo and I'm just not buying that. And in Con Air, Colm Meaney at some point is like, why don't we blow up the plane? And I was like, yeah, why don't you blow up the fucking plane? Like, there needs to be hostages, or it's got a bomb on it, or it's got just another reason why you don't shoot it out of the sky.
And not let the entire tourist
City
population
of Las Vegas
be annihilated by a crashing plane. Yeah,
for that reason, it's his Face Off.
One for Face Off.
Do you want to go next, Alex?
Yeah, sure, I'll go next. So I'll do them in a reverse order. My third place movie of the three, and it's largely down to not really loving the look or performance of Nicolas Cage in it as much as the other two, is Con Air. That's at number three. So rather than just say number two, because I'll reveal the winner, I'll just tell you that it's very close between Face Off and The Rock. I really, really enjoy Face Off. I think, the whole concept is just the right side of insanity to get on board with. And the two of them sparring, Travolta, Cage, wonderful. And The Rock, on the other hand, is just one of those movies that gives me goosebumps and emotional, like, joy every time I watch it. And I think it's spectacular. And I'm picking The Rock because it is definitely, in my opinion, but I hope in a lot of people's opinion, the best movie of these three. I think it's head and shoulders above Con Air, and it's certainly just head above Face Off. I love The Rock so much. It's The Rock.
Pause for effect.
Well, I think the disregard for human life is remarkable in all three of these films. But it was times where I felt like I was watching 3 2-hour trailers, and and I don't think any of them, I don't like any of them as much as I did at the time. At the time, Face Off was my favourite. Last time I visited them all, Con Air was my favourite. And watching it, this, just having this conversation with you guys, like Vicky, I think Con Air might be more progressive than I'd realised based on what you said with that Sally Can't Dance character. So I've got to give it credit there. But one film felt like the director was trying to make art rather than just explosions, and featured actual women characters and a brilliant Nick Cage performance for the first half hour. So for me, it's got to be Face Off.
Yay!
Holy shit! Really?
Followed by Con Air and then The Rock.
Oh, see, I'd Face Off, The Rock, Con Air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Con Air is the weakest, but
I don't like The Rock.
I feel like I've been blindsided here because I've walked in today and I remember at the start when we were standing outside, I was like, I think we're probably all going to go for the same movie. I was so convinced that The Rock is genuinely, of these three films, just the best film in every way.
I was going to get onto almost auteur theory, where it feels like Face Off is made by an auteur, a guy with a real overarching vision, where I feel like Michael Bay could have directed Con Air and Simon West could have directed The Rock. I really do. I think it's just something magical. There's some magic about Face Off that I don't see in the other.
But that's the idea. I think that's the right... Like, John Woo, like... I mean, granted, at the time, it looked more special than it does now. And the action in it for 1997 was like mind-blowing. This like double guns, slow-mo doves. And we'd never seen that before, really, apart from a little bit in Broken Arrow. Or I hadn't anyway. And to me, it looks dated. Whereas The Rock now looks as good as like a movie that could come out tomorrow. Like it hasn't aged.
And yet still it lost.
Mm. And still, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm just trying to... Process. I'm talking through my process.
If we'd gone to a tie break, I got in touch with a friend of mine, Greg McLennan, who I consider to be the biggest Nicolas Cage film on the planet.
Fan.
For the last few years, he organised a film festival called Caged, where it would be all Nicolas Cage all weekend.
Wow.
And he did that up until 2017, when Nicolas Cage actually showed up at the festival. And because of that, he'd invited him every year, but he'd never come. And because of that, he said, we can't do it again. It's finished. Nick Cage came, did a Q&A, watched some films with them, and then got on stage and read Edgar Allan Poe's The Telltale Heart from start to finish for the audience.
That's so brilliant.
Wow.
So I asked Greg which one's the best. I thought, if anyone's going to know, it's him. And I said, which one's about out of these three? And he wrote back and said, is your podcast called Sophie's Choice? He went with Face Off.
Wow.
Yeah, he said that The Rock might be a better film, but he said the better Cage film is Face Off, and his personal favourite is Face Off. And so that's the direction he went in.
I mean, that throws, you know... no pun intended, a cat amongst the pigeons, because I'd agree. I think when you said it in your verdict, I do think the first 15 minutes of Cage in Face Off is the best Cage of all three films. But after...
Cool, you can change.
I'm not changing.
You're allowed to. We will let you this week. It's four, actually, for Face Off this week.
It's not. I'm sitting here in my little Michael Bay-shaped cocoon. But it's The Rock for me. But fair enough, Face Off is the winner this week. There will be a poll on Twitter where you can...
He's so desperate for his poll. These pathetic little victories.
What's the problem? We run a poll for exactly the reason where our dear listeners get the right to...
You got it wrong because the poll's different.
I'm just saying, I think
such
the poll...
a baby.
I just think the poll is going to have something to say about this result because The Rock is the better film. All right, we are done. Very exciting, though. You already know the movies for next week. It's a big week. Chris is going to be going through Sunshine and I am going to be talking through Event Horizon. Thank you again. For the people who sent those in, you will get a mention on next week's show as a way of showing our gratitude. Right then, shall we go? I'm going to go
in here for 10 hours and we can't even go to the pub now.
I'm going to cry. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to us, rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify or other. Followers at ClashPod on Twitter, at ClashPod on Instagram. The Rock is still the best. Love you. Bye.
Pathetic.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.